Blog Talk Radio.
Drinking Pussy Juice by Catfish McDerris. I couldn't sleep. Needing warm milk, there was none. The cat had just given birth. Trying to milk her into a shot glass didn't work. Finally, I held Farthead up to my face and sucked right out of her tits. The white liquid was wet and warm and soothing. The light came on, my lady screaming, "You crazy fucking pervert!" I just kept sucking like a feline zombie vampire as she beat me with her house shoe.
Yeah, here we are, another Friday night with pretty much nothing to lose, right? That's the name of the show. We got nothing to lose here tonight, and that was a believe it or not, that was a really hot chick reading some of the work of one of our featured guests here tonight, Catfish McDerris. Her name is Wonder Hussy. Yeah, and from Drunken Absurdity. Yeah, we'll get to that soon here, but I'm going to bring on my co-host here, Mr. Michael D. Gasinski. Mr. Gasinski, are you there, man?
Hola, Señor Fouché.
Hola, hola, hola indeed. Wow, yeah, so when you get a Wonder Hussy reading your poetry...
Yeah, you know you really made it.
Ding, 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 ding. Bingo. Yeah, you made it. Wow. I've seen the video, and yeah, I might have violated myself to it a couple of times. But anyhow, I digress. We have a really... We have a really cool show here set up tonight. We've got two great guests. I mean, Catfish McDerris, he's been around. He's been in the scene, been writing poetry and fiction and stuff for over 20 years now. And I'm sure he's going to be fun and wonderful. And then later on in the second hour, we actually have Catrice Cornett. She is a gospel singer. And we're going to talk about her her new single she just put out called Abba Father, and much more. It will be fun. And eventually, I think our other co-host, Dr. Quinn, will chime in. She's always late, but that's just the way she is. So, yeah, yeah. So anyhow, I've been thinking, man.
Oh,
like,
no.
I've been thinking, like, okay, so say you're a boxer or you know, some sort of NFL team, some sort of team. If you had a theme song, like walk-in music, you know, like Eye of the Tiger, the thrill of the fight, you know, or some sort of, you know, theme music, walking in, say, to a poetry event or something, what would it be? What would it be?
Oh, Jesus Christ. I don't know, man.
Surely, oh, come on. Surely you've thought of this.
I mean, I'd have to pull out a curveball. You know, I'd have to bust out with something like MC Hammer. They put me in the mix or something.
MC Hammer, huh? Put me in the mix.
Boom! Out of nowhere. You know, just prepare them for. I mean, what would you pick? Like Juice Newton or something? What would you go for?
Juice Newton? What are you talking about? No. Oh God, what would be my theme song? Lord.
I mean, you probably thought I'd pick something heavy metal, you know. That,
I did. I assumed it was going to be some sort of heavy metal for you. Yeah.
Well, see, that's too trendy, you know. Like, you know, Triple H, he already has Motorhead to lead him in, so you know, I couldn't go with the metal, you know. So what would you choose? What would you do?
For me, like, okay,
yeah.
For me, like, walking into what type of event? I mean, it depends on the venue, I guess, the venue, okay?
Well,
what are we talking about?
If you're walking into a poetry event, you'd probably be wearing a diaper instead of trunks. So, you know, I mean, what would you do at a poetry event? What kind of?
Oh, you know what? Probably the theme song to Captain Kangaroo. You're probably too young to even remember that.
I remember. I never forget scary pedophiles.
Oh, boo.
I was more, believe it or not, I was more of a lamb chop kind of kid.
Ew, really?
I watched the woman with the sock puppets. I don't know why. I watched the woman with the sock puppets on her damn hands.
Women with sock puppets. See right there.
Yeah,
that sounds like a title for my next chapbook.
Yeah, there you go. See, that, you know, Catfish McGarris gets, you know, Wonder Hussy to read his poetry. I would have a woman with sock puppets who would read mine, you know, some crazy stuff.
Right. That's great. You know, something else that really caught my attention this week, and you know, it's obvious. I have a crush on Miley Cyrus right now. But, you know, I used to, back in like 1990, I had a huge crush on Sinead O'Connor. And when I saw Sinead O'Connor write this open letter to freaking Miley Cyrus, you know, it's like, oh, boy, here we go. It's just...
okay, you know, as I say, you know, Sinead O'Connor is a woman who was no longer relevant, so she had to rip up or burn a picture of the Pope so people would care about her again. So she's kind of a hypocrite to attack Miley. Come on.
See? Oh, well, I agree. I concur. Absolutely, 100%. And, oh, my gosh, I think Dr. Quinn, she's perpetually late. I mean, what, Dr. Quinn, are you there?
I am here, gentlemen.
There she is.
Dr.
Yay! She's finally home from another football game. How'd it go? How was the football game?
Well, I kind of, aside from the fact that I kind of got into a pissing match with my editor, okay, I guess.
Well, that's not good.
Over,
you don't want to get
high school football?
Here's the thing. I got a note from him because, okay, I write my story, and I put in parentheses the records of the teams, and I don't actually know the records of the teams, so, you know, I mean, what have I not been telling you guys that I don't know about football? I've been telling you this all season, I don't pay attention, I don't give a shit. I wait for my one editor to send me the information that I need to know to incorporate my story, which I would hope would include records, but they didn't. So, of course, you know, in the 20 minutes that I have to write the story, I, of course, try to look for the records.
Wow.
To see if I could find them, which I didn't. And so I got this note back chastising me that, you know, Quinn, you have to have the records, because I don't have time to look them up on deadline. And it was kind of like, you don't think I tried to look them up? Because I did.
Well,
oh,
you know
anyway,
what? Well, you know what? It amazes me that you still have a job. Wow. Yeah, so hey, yeah, to get you up to speed, first of all, quickly, very quickly, Dr. Quinn, theme song.
Yes.
If you had a theme song, this is what we started off with. If you had a theme song, like, say, you know, boxers and, like, some, you know, like,
well,
football teams
all that
walk in with, like, a theme song going, what would yours be?
I was asked that question as a senior in high school.
Uh-huh.
And what did I choose way back when?
We don't know. That's why we're asking.
Just have a tard moment?
I think at the time I said something like David Lee Roth, because at the time he could wear, you know, buttless pants and get away with it.
Yeah, well, David
so
Lee Roth isn't a theme
David
song.
Roth.
I mean, what David Lee Roth song? Spit it out.
Probably back then it was just Gigolo.
Really? Wow. Oh, God.
Yeah, but again, it was only because I could, you know, I could get away with wearing buttless pants. now,
I still wear those. Fuck you.
Well,
all right.
I do. Now
you want to show? You're trying to show off your rose ass tattoo or what?
I just thought it was funny at the time. Now, if I had to choose a theme song, probably.
Say you were walking into a big poetry event, you know, and you had the red carpet and everything, and you were like, you know, you were the headliner. You were the headliner. What would it be? What would it be? Come on, Quinn. Come on, Dr. Quinn. Dr. Reverend Quinn,
ballroom Hero, I'm telling you, Ballroom Hero by the Dropkick Murphys.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I can live with that. All right.
There you go.
And next thing, very quickly, to get you up to speed,
yes.
Sinead O'Connor, you know, with her open letter to Miley Cyrus, you know, what's that all about?
You know, I heard you guys talking about that, and I kind of applaud Sinead for giving Miley the business.
Oh, boy. Here we go. Okay.
Yeah.
Here we go.
What's that supposed to mean?
Oh, nothing.
What is that
This is fodder for later in the show, for sure. We are going to go head-to-head and debate it. Oh, boy. You bet your sweet ass. In the meantime, Gesinski, man, regardless of authority number three, man, stellar lineup.
Catfish. It has Catfish McDerriff in it. It does have
Catfish in it. John Krakowski.
JFK, good piece.
This has been the best issue yet, in my opinion, regardless of authority. John Krakowski, James Babbs, William Taylor Jr., Cassandra Dallet, J.J. Campbell, I mean, Bradley Mason Hamlin, Tim Murray.
That Tim Murray piece is the funniest damn piece I've ever read in my life. I was in hysterics reading the damn thing. It's called, excuse me, Life is Like an Ocean of Toenail Clippings. It's really good.
See, the guy is hilarious.
He
and I probably stayed up pretty much all night laughing and giggling over a stupid movie, old black and white 1969 movie. But anyhow, So what was it like for you putting this latest issue together? I mean, how's it going with Regardless of Authority?
You know, I can't do anything without contributors, and so you know, I've been really fortunate. People send me some solid work, and and it's just this one kind of came together at the end. You know, it was like a last week or so. I kind of went, all right, good. I've got, you know, good work here. I've got, you know, William Taylor Jr. actually sent his submission like the last day I was looking at submissions. So it really came together at the end. It was, you know.
Yeah, that's the way it works sometimes, man. I know. Believe me, I know. And this has been the most solid issue yet. It just seems like Regardless of Authority keeps getting better and better. And you know what? I'm looking forward to that first issue of Blotterature. Blotterature, hello, Dr. Quinn. I know you're a part of the Blotterature.
Yeah,
hello.
What do you guys want to know? We're still taking submissions. We've got about a month to go.
Uh-huh.
And we need more art. Come on, people.
Art?
Okay. Send us your creative nonfiction.
That's going to be harder to come by than poetry.
we found that out, Quinn. You know, a lot of people don't submit the art. So what we wind up doing a lot of times is we got to solicit people for the art. We find an artist we like, and then it goes from there.
And that is what we shall do, because this is
pretty hard to get art. And then you ask somebody, you're like, hey, you know, would you like to contribute? They're like, oh, yeah, I've got, you know, 25 photos here, man. You know, it's like they send you a ton of work. You're like, well, why didn't you just submit to begin with?
Right.
So, Catfish McDerriff, our number one featured guest here tonight on the show. He is in the latest edition of Regardless of Authority. And you know what? Let's bring him on and let's pick his brain, because you know, I'm already beyond intrigued. I mean, you get a wonder hussy reading your stuff. I mean, come on. All right, we're going to bring on Mr. Catfish McDerriff. Catfish McDerris, you are on live. Hello.
Hey, man. How's it going?
Hey, what's up, Catfish?
What's that guy there? Where's the diaper on there?
I'm always wearing one. I shit all over the place. But, hey, welcome on the show, and thanks for coming on, man.
Thank you.
Wow. Yeah, you've been around in the scene, and I hate to even call it a scene, but, I mean, you've been writing. You've been a writer, poet, and everything for years and years and years, and boom, here you are. Wow. It's great to have you on, and, I don't even know where to start with you, buddy. You were born in Albuquerque? Is that something to brag about or not?
Yeah, man. Albuquerque's a great town. That's the number one town. I grew up in Clovis, though, New Mexico.
Uh-huh.
That's like more about 10 miles from Texas.
Uh-huh.
It's nothing to speak of, but I've been up around Milwaukee for about 35 years now.
Right.
I live in a suburb of Milwaukee.
Milwaukee,
Wisconsin.
Yeah.
The land of beer and cheese.
Oh, are you a Green Bay Packers fan? Just asking.
No. I like boxing and I like bullfighting.
Boxing and bullfighting, that's an excellent combination. Yeah. I like boxing too. So, hey, man. All right. What initially turned you on to writing and poetry and fiction or whatnot? I mean, how did you even get into that? I mean, what spurred that whole moment in your life? I mean, how did you get inspired?
Well, I kind of was autodidactic, you know, self-taught. I dropped out of school early and bummed around, ended up reading all the time, went in the Army. I started writing long letters, took a few college classes, got my GED, and then took the college classes.
Yeah.
And then, kept bumming around, you know, I'd write a few things, you know, never really tried to get published.
Right.
And then I got in the post office here in Milwaukee, and I discovered the Beats and Bukowski early on, you know, with his post
mm-hmm.
office stuff. And so there was a big poetry scene here in Milwaukee. Antler was here. He's still here. And a lot of really great poets. We're not too far from Chicago, an hour and a half by train or car. And that was where the Green Mill is. That's where the Poetry Slam started. And
wow.
I went down there and I practiced my chops down there and down here. And the scene was so... Okay, like you guys got your scene with Michelle and Tim and you, Brian, and a bunch of other ones that travel around, you know, together and do poetry reads.
Mm-hmm.
And once you get in a group like that, if you get on the stage and stuff and you can hold your own on the stage, then you can hold your own anywhere, you know. And Milwaukee had that kind of scene here, you know. So then I started doing some traveling. I got to go read with a bunch of beatniks in 98 up at Allen Ginsberg's farm. And that was kind of I got to read with Ed Sanders of the Fugs, Ann Wallman, David Amram. He used to play backup for Kerouac, Ray Brimser. He was like a prison 12 years in prison writing poetry. Kerouac wrote the intro to his first chapbook, and I got real close with them. And before that, I got some books from signed books from Ginsberg and Burroughs. And so I kind of used that to pay for my trip from Milwaukee to Utica, New York, where where I got off the train and ended up in Cherry Valley, New York, where I ended up doing that read. And then I also got to read in Paris at the Shakespeare and Company bookstore. And that was a, you know, a unique experience. It wasn't a big deal, though, you know. But I've had a lot of good readings, you know. And the thing is, though, you know, it's hard to sell books and stuff. And I made a lot of chapbooks through the years. My biggest seller was Prying. And I did that by meeting Jack Michelin. And he gave me four unpublished poems by Bukowski. And Micheline threw in some poems, and he told me to write three nasty stories, which I did, and we put that together, and Prying was like four book poems he wrote in 74, and let's see, Micheline, I think he had about five or six, and Micheline, man, he's an excellent poet.
Oh, yeah.
And, he died, I think, in 2001, and Bukowski died in 94. But that Prying, a little chapbook, man, it's, you know, I saw it online for like $65 and stuff like that. It came out like $4 or whatever.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, you know, you keep some, now with pay on demand and, you know, Lulu.com, and anybody can, you know, make hardcovers, and, you know, with computers, anybody can really make chapbooks, you know?
Right. Yeah, it's changed. You're right. You're right. With all the social media and all the technology at our fingertips now, anybody can pretty much, publish, you know, whatever. I don't know if that's a – I mean, in some ways it is a good thing, and in other ways it's kind of, you know, detrimental. I mean, in the fact not that people can communicate and spread their word or their art, but detrimental in the fact that, it kind of – you know, when you have something very unique, like what you were just talking about, you know, as far as like a print book or something like that, I mean, it's just – I totally see what you're saying. Totally get it. And you know what? I gotta ask. Okay, all right. You have been around the block once or twice, or three or four times.
under the block, round.
There was rumors. Oh my God! I remember quite a few years ago that you had passed away.
Oh yeah, yeah. Was that
intentional, or what was it?
Oh, man.
What was that all about?
Okay, 10 years ago.
It probably was about 10 years ago,
It was. I can tell you exactly when it was, man. Anyway, 10 years ago, when I was 50 years old, I just turned 60.
Uh-huh.
I've always been bipolar and had anxiety attacks. X and all this shit, man. Anyway, for all those years, I was drinking a lot, and I was taking a lot of lithium and Seroquel, and finally they changed it to Depakote and Xanax and Clonazepam, and you just name it, and I was taking it, man.
Jeez,
and,
that's hardcore.
I was fully fucked up, man. I was at the post office. I had to be on. I'm still married to the same woman for 30 years. We got a 25-year-old daughter, but I was losing my mind, man. I just lost it, you know.
Uh-huh.
I just lost it, and I decided to kill myself on my 50th birthday. I took all these bottles of pills, man, and they were just brand new prescription. I took like 6 bottles of pills, and I drank like 4 bottles of wine and a couple 40 ounces, and I decided to die, man. My wife, they had a breakdown in the door. She called the ambulance, and they took me to the hospital, and they threw me in the nut house, and I was in the nut house for a while, and then I got into rehab, and that didn't really work. You know, it worked for a while and stuff, man, but then I decided to kill myself again the second time, and this time I got Jose Cuervo and weed and decided to row out into Lake Michigan, you know, and I got out there and Coast Guard saved my ass. And then the last...
Are you serious? Are you making that up? I mean, that just almost sounds like a fun story. Are you serious?
This is all serious, man.
Oh,
this
man, okay,
happened.
That's great. Okay,
hey,
no,
you
no, want to no.
know the story? I'll tell you the story.
Shall we?
Yeah. The third time I decided I split from my wife by this time.
Uh-huh.
And I had quit my job where I was able to get it back and get my wife back and everything. But by this time I'd quit my job, and I decided the third time I went and rented a brand new Cadillac, and I took a hose, garden hose and duct tape, and I decided to kill myself in the luxury of a Cadillac. And buddy of mine found me, and all this time I was trying to go through AA, I was trying to go through doctors, I was trying to get straight and all this shit, and none of it worked, man. Anyway, this last time this guy helped me, he took me to the VA, man. So I went in to a 6-month program here in Milwaukee at the Veterans Hospital, because I do have honorable discharge from the Army. I was in the Army for 3 years. So I went in for 6 months, man, and it was like, whew, shit, man. Yeah, they put you in 180 meetings in 90 days, you know, and they were AA, NA, CA. Every day you have to stay in there, and you're like, they have spot checks for weed, for alcohol, anything, man. But if you stay in there, you're good to go, man. But anyway, so I completed the program, and they more or less, they give you the chance to fuck up, but if you don't, man, they're going to teach you how to live a new life, man. And I've been clean since I got out of there.
Well,
I was able to get my job back,
mm-hmm.
my wife back, but I haven't been able to get my daughter back, man. She hasn't talked to me for 10 years. But what happened was, everybody thinking that I died, I was trying to walk away from the small press, but I was so, you get so fucking caught up in it that you're hooked,
yeah.
man. It's like heroin, man. You get so
yeah.
many people that are dependent on you that you love them like your family, and sometimes your
right.
priorities are all screwed up. And at that time, you're talking about, okay, we were just going into computers, man, but before you send out a SASC with your work, and then it comes back, and you're living every day for what's coming in the mailbox today. Did I get a reject? Did I get acceptance? You know, who did I get in with? You know, did I get in with Ginsburg this time? How about Bukowski? You know, what's this, Ferlinghetti? You know, and you're waiting to see who you're going to get in with and all this shit, man. Hey, you can let this shit eat you alive, man. And I know you got kids. Don't let
mm-hmm.
that shit fuck you up, man, because poetry will fuck you up. The small press will fuck you up if you let it. You got to have your priorities set.
Right. Hey, and you know what? So I know you mentioned Bukowski, and, you know, you working in the post office and
yeah.
all that. So I kind of get that connection, you know, post office. I've read that Bukowski novel, and I'll let and all that, and then, you know, you have this really crazy book that you did with an Aussie author and publisher, Ben John Smith. You did a collaboration called "Dancing Naked on Bukowski's Grave," you
yeah.
know, with Ben John Smith of Horace Lee's Trash.
Oh yeah, yeah, he's one of my buds, man. Another one I did was "Tales from French Envelope" with Craig Scott.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, yeah, that's another really good one, man. Craig's really good, too, man. I like
yeah,
both
Craig's
those.
A good writer. I like Craig.
They're both good guys, man. I just want to make an announcement for all the people that like Bukowski, man. This Silver Birch Press just came out with a new Bukowski anthology, and this is a really masterpiece, man. I got a real small poem in there about my daughter when she was 8 years old, and she got published with Bukowski, and she did. But people should look that one up. It's a really good one, man. And Silver Birch, man, when they send out some ads for submissions and stuff, man, they do real good work. And the same thing with Blue Hour too, man. Yeah, see, they're real, both real good spots, you know, and they're pretty new out there, you know.
Yeah. So, well, what was it like? What was it like working with Ben John Smith?
Oh man, he's nuts, man.
I know he's nuts.
Yeah.
In a good fun way. Yeah. What was that like? What was that collaboration like?
He's an excellent writer. He's I'm older than his parents, you know, but we still got along good, you know. When he wants to write, he can really write good, man. He sees some deep shit, you know. And I learned a lot about Australia. I ended up with three real good friends from Oz. That's what they call it, O-Z, Oz.
Right.
And Benny, man, he's nuts, man. I mean, he can tell, you know, we stay in touch all the time. And, you know, I just put a little video of him reading one of my poems, you know, on Facebook, man. And he's nuts. Hey, okay, let me tell you, you were talking before about Wonder Hus. I don't know where the hell. She did two of my poems, not just one.
Oh,
but,
really? You got more than one from Wonder Hussy, huh? Wow.
Yeah, I don't, man, this all came out of my buddy Adam Sherling, and he's another guy that's just like Ben John Smith. He runs Drunken Absurdity.
Uh-huh.
And it's from the U.S. It's from like New England, I think Rhode Island or somewhere. Anyway, he made me his U.S. correspondent at large, man, which means nothing. But, you know, I send him every once in a while. I don't know, out of the blue, he says, hey, Catfish, I got something for you I want to show you. And he sends me these two, you know, with his chick, you know, squirming around on the floor in a bikini and shit, you know, Wonder Hussy, man. And I was laughing like hell, man. I said, oh, man, what are you going to do? But, yeah, it's kind of cool, you know.
Yeah, well, don't you have like, something newer coming out here, or that is out, called Jupiter Orgasma?
Out, man. That's out. That's my masterpiece. Yeah, man. That was my last book. It's a hardcover. It's from Lulu, and it's got a 9-chapter novella in there that I call The Painter. And it's about my hippie days up in the New Mexico mountains. I kind of superimposed my adventures onto a guy that paints naked women into orgasms, having orgasms. That's his thing, man.
Wow.
And,
okay.
And in this chapter, he finds a woman, and he gets laid or blown in each chapter, man. And this French guy was going to do he was going to do it on his site. He was a French gay guy, and he said it got him so hot he was on the bus in France going to work, and he gave him a hard-on. He was gay, man. Anyway, the guy was supposed to do some translations, and nothing happened, so I kind of pulled back from him, you know. Sometimes deals just don't work out, you know. That's okay, though.
Well,
I got
okay.
some more stuff. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, you say you feel like that was probably some of your best work or your better work as far as poetry goes, or I mean,
yeah,
what?
Man, that's my latest stuff, all new, you know, Jupiter Orgasma. Yeah, that's my best one. I got another little one that I still have some copies of, you know, that I did with Subhankar Das. He's one of my partners that's in Calcutta, India.
Uh-huh.
And he, it's called Naked Fly Cherry Marijuana. And,
sounds great.
This guy, another Australian buddy of mine, he painted this, naked lady in a bathtub for the cover, man. And, Subhankar sent me like 50 copies, you know. And I said, how many copies are you printing? And he says, I'm going to print 250. First run, and he says, I'm going to give you 50 free, and I was like, oh, man, I don't even want that many, you know, forever, man, but, yeah, anyway, that Wonder Hussy, hey, you guys were talking about Captain Kangaroo and all that stuff, And I was listening to, you know, Cabin Kangaroo and what was the one, the Lamb Chops and all
yes,
that.
Yes, Lamb Chops.
Let me tell you about this guy that I know. He was, this guy was pretty damn famous and an excellent poet. His name was Seaborn Jones, and he lives in Lizella, Georgia. And I haven't heard from him in about 10, maybe 15 years, but he was married to the princess on the Mr. Rogers show. Remember Mr. Rogers?
Yeah.
Mr. Rogers, yeah.
He was married to the princess, man. Princess Leia or whatever the hell her name was.
Carrie Fisher?
Anyway, he worked at a snake ranch in Lizella, Georgia, and he wrote some damn good poetry, man. And he had his job was to milk poisonous snakes so he could get venom for antidotes and stuff, man. But he got bit a few times, so I don't know if he's still alive.
That's what I was talking about
Captain Kangaroo.
That's a high-risk occupation, man.
Yeah, hell yeah, man. I wrote a story about a guy working on a skunk ranch in Texas.
Skunk ranch.
And he had to masturbate the skunks. That was his job. It was for a French perfume company because the skunk sperm, they used it in perfume, you know, to make it go farther. So the guy decided he was going to go off on his own, so he invested in a bunch of skunks, and one of those Texas tornadoes come along and
Texas tornado.
And he was basically fucked, man.
You said you've been cleaning for you know many years now, right? Now a lot of writers I hear say, you know, they gotta drink or they gotta, you know, get messed up so they can write. Do you think your writing has gotten better since you've cleaned up?
Oh yeah, man. Hell yes. Before when I drank, you know, I could write. I mean, it still opens your mind up, you know, when you're all loose and stuff, you can think of shit, but you can, I mean, now I still take drugs, man. I mean, I take a lot of drugs, you know.
Right.
For I take Depakote and Seroquel, and they're both real strong drugs, you know. And if I have a panic attack, I take a Xanax. But I haven't taken a drink in, well, it'll be 10 years next June 5th, you know.
Wow.
But,
congratulations.
Yeah. Well, it's still, you know, you got to keep it a day at a time. I think I miss tobacco more than alcohol, though, man. Every once in a while, I walk.
I think it's harder to quit than alcohol. I've seen
people hooked on tobacco.
Wow.
I quit while I was in the Army.
I quit
here and there, you know, all during my life. I quit for 25 years while I was married, you know. And then one day, man, I picked up a cigar, and the next thing I knew, I was toking away, man. And then I started picking up. Then I went back to weed, man. That was real bad.
Weed. I know all about that wacky tobacco.
Hey, man, I forgot how much I liked it, man. I loved it when I was young, man. I used to love that shit, man. And then I quit for probably 20, 25 years. I got to tell you about the last time I was on the radio, man. It was with a guy here in Milwaukee. And the guy, he was playing a bunch of music, and I had to go in the studio with him and stuff. And he hands me a joint. He lights up a joint, and he hands it to me, man. And I'm already nervous, man. And I never met guy or anything, man, and we're sitting there toking away, and I says, don't you think somebody's going to come in here? He said, don't fucking worry about it, man. We see some cops walking by, and he's still toking away. Then he gives me we start talking on the mics and stuff, and I've never even met the guy, man. He says, yeah, man. He says, oh, this is Catfish McDears, greatest poet in Milwaukee, man. We know him way back, you know, and before we know it, we start talking about bovine flatulence in Milwaukee and how it's polluting all the rivers and the air and all this shit. So it's getting nuts, man.
Bovine flatulence.
Yeah, bovine flatulence, yes.
That's a good name for a chapbook.
Yes, absolutely. That's the name of my next chapbook. I've got at least two titles now.
Let me ask you a question.
Yeah, please do.
Yeah, man. So what kind of reaction do you get with that diaper? You don't think... I mean...
Wow, the diaper, the whole diaper thing, yeah. Some people get it and laugh and go,
really
ha-ha.
Know, Brian.
And other people really get pissed off. Just literally offended and pissed. Oh, yeah, they do.
You don't ever put any Tootsie Rolls in there or anything like that, do you? Or...
Oh, I literally pissed live in my diaper at one point. There's video evidence of it.
Oh, God.
I digress. I digress.
Take a leak, you know?
Yeah. It was a very strange sensation, you know. Probably one I hadn't felt since I was probably, you know, 2 years old or, you know, 1 year old or whatever, when you still piss in a diaper. So I couldn't relate to it because, you know, we don't remember that. But it felt very warm and very... very different, very warm and wet. Warm and wet. Wow, kind of the way I like my women. Yeah. But anyhow, I digress. Thanks for the question. You have any more for me?
Yeah, I was just going to tell you a couple of things, you know, about... I think poetry, you know, people just get up there and... Like, uh-huh. I don't know if you know who Fred Voss is. He's married to Joan Job Smith, and she, like... edited Pearl and the Bukowski Review. Uh-huh. Anyway, he's like a, you know, he kind of knew Bukowski. He's an L.A. poet, and he's been around the block. He was one of the guys that read when the Bukowski anthology, The Silver Birch, they just had a reading out in California, and he read my poem. Anyway, I was listening to it, and it was just, you know, when I listen to poetry readings, sometimes they just, you know, they kind of make you want to nod off unless somebody does something outrageous, you know, and brings in like vaudeville and raises some hell or starts screaming. Like I was talking to Michelle and I was telling her some of the crazy reads that I was at.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if you guys saw that picture. I used to do like a Urkel and Pee Wee Herman, you know, gay routine, you know, and I'd talk for one of them and talk for the other one and talk for the other one, and then people would start getting all crazy, you know, and some of them started wanting to get all pissed off, but that was one of them that really kind of irritated people. But I had another one. I went down to the Salvation Army, and I got all these women's panties, and I tried to get them. I tried to get the biggest, ugliest panties I could find, man. And I must have had like about 15 pair one night, man. And I started reading, and I says, and this is going to be my reverse Tom Jones poem, man. And I'd read a few words, and then I'd throw a big pair of panties, you know, and try to land them on some woman's head and shit, man. And I started throwing these panties out into the audience, man, and they were fucking going crazy, man. It was a good time, man.
Sounds
Other
like it.
Was, we used to have this guy... It was a gay guy, and he had a long beard, but he'd always come, and he'd be the master of ceremonies with a dress, you know, and he'd wear these little dainty dresses, you know, sometimes mini skirts, you know, all this stuff, man. He was gay as hell, and he'd always bring in, like, loads of fake money, you know. He'd bring, like, a briefcase, kind of like he was the Blues Brothers, you know, and then he'd have some fake dollar bills there, you know, and... He'd be out there and twitching around and all that shit, you know. And at that time, I was working with a guy that played the bass. And so we'd be up there, and my buddy would be playing bass, and I'd be reading and shit. And after everybody read, after each poet read, he'd hand them a bundle of money, you know, like he was paying them off, you know. And one time we got up there, I think I was a second reader, and he opens his suitcase of money, and there's like a big audience too, man. And I grabbed a suitcase from it, and I just started throwing it in the air, all this money, man, and it was just coming down everywhere. And he was just running around screaming, man, in a little woman's voice, man. It was a shit pit.
That's crazy. Yeah. Man, oh, yeah. You apparently have been involved in a lot of crazy live readings and everything, man. That's, wow.
Yeah, man.
I admire that.
A lot of them. I counted two.
I really do. And I admire your writing, too, buddy.
I used
no
to
doubt
count,
about it.
You know how the Indians count coup with a stick? You know, like instead of killing their enemies, they have like a power stick, you know, like a stick with some feathers and, you know, beads and shit and like a little rattle and shit like that. And
yeah.
Instead of killing their enemy, they just go and touch them with it, you know. I'd go around and get all the poets and fucking count. And they would get so pissed off, man. I piss off a lot of people, man.
You would just touch them with this little stick thing then, huh?
I have my little stick, man, like my little magic wand, man. You're like, you fucking asshole, what are you doing, man?
That's great. Wow, you're giving me a lot of bad ideas.
I tell you this one right here. This is the best one to use, Brian. And
okay,
you don't have
let's hear it. Let's hear
have
it.
Any props or anything. You
okay.
Wait until everybody gets in the, you know, hopefully you got a decent room of people, because most of the readings, there ain't nobody there except for the ones that want to read too, you know.
Right.
But anyway, and maybe their husbands or wives. But mm-hmm. You have everybody, you know, up there and kind of looking towards the podium or the front of the room and everything. Just go way in the back, man, and then just start screaming. And then read your first poem in the back of the room. Don't go to the front. Make them all turn around, man. And then as you start on your second poem, then start walking real slow to the front.
That
is brilliant. Do it like an Apache war whoop all the way down the aisle.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that'll get them. I did that when
God.
I was up all the beatniks, man. That was fucking cool.
Wow. See, there
yeah,
we go.
There's a lot of ways you can stir up, you can have some fun reading, you know.
Uh-huh. Oh, absolutely.
It's boring, man, you know, like, I don't know.
Oh, I agree. I agree with you. And I hate to admit it that many, you know, many times, you know, you go to a lot of these readings, live readings, and, you know, it is kind of a snore fest, just like, you mentioned.
It is.
And, just like, you know, you got to kind of shake it up a little bit and get people's attention, like, hey, pay attention, you know? And sometimes you have to be, you know,
right.
A little outrageous there.
Vacation,
and you give me
man.
Some great ideas, buddy. You're bad influence
you
on me.
You get with your friends, and you're gonna. And when you do it, I want you to record some of my ideals and you do it, especially give the panties the one from the back of the room, man. You can also,
brilliant.
here's another idea I wrote, and I never used it myself. You get a cat box, man, a cat litter box, and pour some litter in, man, and just, oh, no, my wife is using the bathroom again, and she's got her coffee people over here for a book meeting, and they're reading, and I can't, and now I have to go to the basement and use the cat litter, and it's not in the
Jesus Christ.
Poem.
Okay, you know what?
When I wrote,
wow, you're
never...
giving me way too many good ideas here, buddy, and you're going to get me in trouble, but, you know, I'm going to do it. The next poetry reading I'm involved with, there's going to be a litter box. There we go. Holy shit. You crack me up, man. That's great.
Yeah, Michelle thought we'd hit it off pretty good. So are your
wow.
other friends? Or is Michelle still here and Mike?
Oh,
yeah,
I'm here.
Yeah,
I'm
Dr.
There.
Quinn and Mr. Gosinski, do you guys have any questions for...
Well, I kind of had
But I had a question, but I don't know if it's too deep and would bring the mood kind of down.
No mood bringing down.
Bringing down, baby.
Well, okay, so you said there were two or three suicide attempts.
Three.
Okay.
Yeah.
What made you decide to not do it again? Or what made you want to live?
My wife, my daughter, you know.
Okay.
I had to get rid of religion to find God, if that makes any sense.
Oh, that makes total
sense,
yeah.
Absolutely.
Sometimes you got to get rid of it to find that higher power, you know, have it inside you. And I kind of needed to be retrained, you know. I was 50 years old, but shit, man. You know, I had to have my circuits rewired and stuff, you know. But the bad thing I did to the small press was, I wrote a fake letter. The worst thing was I wrote a fake letter and played like it was my daughter and that I had died and they had sprinkled my ashes in Mexico. And at that time, I was a contributing editor to Latino Stuff Review for over 10 years with this Cuban lady. I had a lot of real good friends that were in the small press, and they gave up on me. I mean, and they still have tried to make amends, but, you know, they don't accept my apologies. So,
yeah, well, you know, I think a lot of people have gotten beyond that. I mean, you know.
Maybe some have, but a lot of them don't forgive me, man. A lot of them don't. They don't. I had my buddy in Belgium that used to translate all my stuff into French, man. He said I made him cry and he'll never talk to me again. I had I was getting a little too tight with a lot of women too, you know, and they were like all upset, and I had all kinds of stuff that was, you know, like this one guy said I was trying to act like Mark Twain, that people, he said the people grossly overestimate my demise and all this stupid shit, you know, and I was just fucked up, man. I screwed up, you know, and I apologized.
Yeah.
But
and you know, we all do, and that's all just part of life. And then we, you know what, we fucking pick ourselves up and we move forward, you know, and you definitely have, and you still have a lot of great stuff going on, man. And I love and I admire that. And so.
Well, I probably would have. I even tried not to even come back, man. I tried not to even. At the time, it was real weird, man. When I went in the VA and I was in there 6 months, and I was in a dorm room with three other guys, and they were all most of them. It was 80% black convicts from Hines, and Hines is like almost like a prison down in Chicago. And at that time, it was rough, man. It was real rough, man. It's like,
yeah, no doubt.
But you know, I just hung in there, you know, and I helped a lot of them, you know, learn to use a computer a little bit and all that time, and I tried to come back a little bit at a time, but and it was weird because at that same time I was on Oprah Winfrey's list of great writers and shit, man. And I'm like,
really?
What?
Wow, Oprah.
Yeah, I had this little it was like a internet chat book. It was called Destroy Yourself,
uh-huh.
And it was really, you know, out there, the whole damn thing, man. And Oprah had me all over her websites and stuff, and I was like, shit, what the hell? Supposed
wow.
to be dead. But,
wow,
yeah. Well, you're going to hear that. I mean, oh, yeah, that's the guy that faked his death. Well, the worst part was I used my daughter. I used my daughter.
Well, see,
and,
I had no idea that even occurred, but, you know.
Oh, yeah. It was worse than you probably heard, and there's still people that don't like me, and there's some people out there I don't like. I got some people that made a movie about me, man. Catfish.
A movie? Really?
Yeah, 30-minute movie on YouTube called Catfish is Dead. One day I was looking for a poem, and I come up on this movie, and I see three of my friends, man, and they made this movie about me, man. It's called Catfish is Dead. And I was like, what the fuck, man? And it was bad. It was real bad. And I tried to get it, and then I wrote my friend, my ex-friend that made it, and he said he was sorry, and he took it off. It was still on there, but I couldn't get it, man. He had blocked me somehow or other, man. And I tried to make a complaint with YouTube and all this shit, and finally I talked to the guy, and he says, I'll let you have it, but you can't show it on Facebook or anything like that. And it was kind of strange. I just got an apology from the guy. From one of the guys I hadn't heard from today, you know. But
wow.
But there's some of my friends that haven't forgiven me, you know. And I guess,
well,
what can
you
I
know.
Do?
I
gotta
see your wife, man.
Yeah, I gotta go get a stent in my heart pretty soon. So. Cares, Beth. This might be my last go round anyway. You gotta take it a day at a time, man.
Yeah.
For whatever
right.
it is.
One day at a time. That's pretty much the way I take it. I mean, believe me. Jeez. I get it.
Yeah.
I totally get it. So what's next for you, man? Are you still writing? Is this correct?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you're still writing poetry, fiction.
Every day, man.
And what do you prefer, poetry or fiction?
Either one. Just whatever. I'm a storyteller primarily. I mean, whether
right.
it comes out in a poem or prose or whatever. I just got some... I'm going to have some stuff come out in Bengali. That's going to be translated probably next month. Like I said, that Bukowski anthology. I'm going to be a contributing editor for Silver Birch's Erasure for noir poetry. That you guys know what that is? Erasure stuff. It's like where you take a page of like a Pulp Fiction, you know, a book, and then scan it, and then you take a ruler, kind of like word search, and you mark out the words, and then you make your own poem out of it. She's Melanie Griffin. I was going to say Melanie Villanese, the editor's going to have one of those coming out, and she's always got anthologies. She just got a new thing on Facebook called Bukowski on Rye, and it's WRY. But, yeah, like I said, that Silver Birch is real good. It's kind of crazy. I got this fan letter from a lady named Alexis. I forget all her name. Fancher, Bouchard, or something like that. Anyway, she has a show on Cultural Weekly in Los Angeles, and she gets like 10,000 people reading that or watching it and all that stuff or whatever they do. Anyway, she's going to feature me in mid-February. And I got some stuff coming out.
Yeah, a lot of exciting stuff.
I'm always sending stuff out and usually getting rejected. And I got one coming out in Yellow Mama.
Oh, Yellow Mama. Yeah, that's a good one. I like Yellow Mama. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah,
what do you have? Is it fiction or flash fiction or poetry? What?
It's a poem about me killing a guy. And my brother called me out to Oklahoma, and he wants me to help him clean up the town, so I have to put a double tap on this dude. and I kill his ass. Kill him off. Fuck. You know, just
man,
one of those guys.
I tell you, you have
big,
so much going on, man. So much. And you've been around doing this stuff for so long. It just, I admire that. I mean, seriously.
Well,
me, you're a legend. I mean, I knew about you, Mr. Catfish McDerris, before I even started zagging my coffee or anything else. I mean, over a decade ago.
How many
honestly
catfish?
Did. I heard your name. It was floating around. So, hey, how did you come up with that moniker?
Yeah,
I mean, that pen name. That's a pretty
I was just going to
fun...
ask that. Yeah, how'd you come up with that?
Yeah.
Okay, Bukowski had a friend. Well, he was an editor. He is an Indian guy. His name is Low Dog Reeve, and he's from Indiana. And he had a magazine called Zen Tattoo. And he's a pretty good writer, and he published a lot of Bukowski. Anyway, I sent him some poems, and he liked them, and we became friends. Now, this is probably about 18 years ago. I wrote as Stephen McDerris, probably for about 2 or 3 years, and then the catfish. Anyway, I told him, you know, about me working in the post office, and he thought it was cool because Bukowski worked there and all that. And I told him I was sick of it, though. I was going to quit. I was going to start a catfish farm. And I had actually, you know, had planned it, a catfish farm, you know. And he
uh-huh.
says, you're nuts, man. He says, I'm going to start calling you catfish. And that was it, man. This Indian guy gave me the name Catfish, and that's where it came from.
Well, that's
great. That's great. Well, hey, man, thanks so much for being on, and we're getting ready to go into our second hour. You're welcome to stay on and hang out with us and, you know, shoot the shit.
Man,
and all that.
I'm an old man. I got to go to bed, man. My wife's going to kick.
All right. Well, you know what, Catfish, man. Thanks so much for being on. You've been great. And
hey,
you know what? This interview and everything you've had to say has been very, very, very interesting and very cool. You know, it's not often we get someone, you know, like you on here as far as poetry. We're pretty selective about the people we bring on as far as poetry and writers and all that. And, you know, I knew it. I knew that you would have some great stuff to share and all that and had some great stories, and sure as hell, you really did. And you were just, you're right out there. You're out there, man, just exposing yourself completely, 100%. Nothing fake about you. I mean, just beautiful
okay,
shit, and I appreciate it so much.
And arrivederci, Roma. Bye.
All right. Take it easy, Mr. Catfish. All right, that was Catfish McDerris, and
wow,
he just amazing laid it out
guy.
There for us.
Amazing guy. He's got so much going on.
He does. He has a lot going on. It's wow. He's been around. I mean, he's met a lot of people. He's done a lot of things, and wow, I mean, that's very admirable. I mean, wow. Crap. All right, so I guess we're going to do a little Pup the Magic Dragon. And you know what? After Pup the Magic Dragon, we're going to come back, and we are going to have our next featured guest on. Our next featured guest will be, as you all know already, Catrice. Yes, Catrice Cornett. She is a gospel singer, and she has a new single out called Abba Father, and it's really good, and she too has a lot going on and has had a lot going on, and we will talk to her here in just a few minutes, but right now we're just going to do a little Pup the Magic Dragon and be right back.
In a land called Hanalei, little lights when Puff roared out his name. Oh, Puff, the magic dragon, lived by the sea and frolicked in the autumn mist in a land called Hanalei. Puff, the magic dragon, lived by the sea and frolicked in the autumn mist in a land called Hanalei. Way for other toys. One gray night it happened, Jackie Paper came no more, and Puff, that mighty dragon, he ceased his fearless roar. His head was bent in sorrow, green scales fell like rain. Puff no longer went to play along the cherry.
Reason that song just, you know, I used to have a little 45 of it, you know, a little 45 record of it, and played it all the time. It was on, it still does it for me, and still makes me feel puffy. But anyhow, wow, okay, so, yeah, we just talked to Catfish McDerris, and,
amazing
and,
dude.
He was, wow, he laid it out there, and he was great. Great poet, great writer. So we are going to move forward, right?
Yes.
We are going to bring on our next guest, our next featured guest, Catrice Cornette here. And she has this new song, Abba Father. And you know what? Let's play a little Abba Father, and then we'll bring her on. How about we play her big debut song here, and we will bring her on. All right, here we go.
Oh,
Yeah, that was, wow. Yeah, what a beautiful voice, huh?
Sure.
No doubt, gosh. That was Abba Father from, you know, the new single released by our next guest here, Catrice Cornette. And we're going to bring her on and let her talk about that and much more. She is another person who has a lot going on. So let's bring her on.
Oh.
Hello, Catrice.
Hi, how are you?
Hi.
Hello.
I know it's late, and thanks so much for being on and hanging out with us. And
thanks for having
wow.
me.
Wow. Yeah, you're, I mean, your voice alone, just, oh, my gosh.
Thank
just beautiful.
You.
Beautiful.
Thank
yeah.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. So, wow. Okay, I have to ask, Catrice, wow. How long have you been doing this? How long have you been involved, you know, with, you know,
with
singing?
Singing
and
stuff? I've been singing since I was, like, 4.
Right.
Yeah. My dad started me singing since I was 4 years old, literally.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah. I've been doing it a long time.
Did you start singing, were you singing at home, or did you start singing in the church? Or?
Actually, my family used to have a gospel group. And they would go around singing in local churches, and my dad stuck me on the stage, and I sang a solo for the first time at 4 years old with the family group. Yeah.
Oh, I bet you were nervous. You had to be nervous.
I was. I cried through the whole entire song.
Wow.
I did. I cried through the whole thing. They got it on reel to reel.
Now laugh.
Well, we're not laughing like in a bad way.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Okay.
That's
so,
funny.
So your dad was like a big influence on you initially, as musically.
Oh yeah, always through my whole life. My father just passed away last summer, and he
was
a musical genius. So he was just like, awesome. Musician, he was a music teacher, and he's a really big influence on me musically. Yeah, definitely.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, and I know you have what you have. I mean, you are you currently live in New Jersey. Is that correct?
Yes, I live in Pine Hill, New Jersey. That's
okay.
Southern New Jersey. Like, it's not, like, we're, like, closer to Atlantic City, Delaware, that part of New Philadelphia, you know, that part of New Jersey. That's where I'm, that's where I live now. I'm actually from Baltimore, Maryland, though. And we moved here when I was, like, a teenager, getting ready to go into high school. We moved to the South Jersey area.
Yeah.
And I've been here ever since, doing music and graduated from West Effort High School. I was in the band, in the choir, all of that cool stuff. And I've been doing music my whole entire life. Yeah,
well,
I'm loving it.
That's great. And you had, I mean, what is it? Yeah, Catrice Cornette and the Highest Praise? I mean, that.
Yeah, my group's name is Catrice Cornette and Highest Praise. It's we got started in 2002.
Uh-huh.
We did our first CD project. It was released in 2006. It was called Brand New Day Live, and it happened because a bunch of me and my friends were asked to sing at a friend's church for a special occasion, and so I asked a bunch of my friends who are also singers if they would help me out, and they did, and I thought it was going to be a one-time thing. This was just, you know, to help out a friend at church. And then people just kept asking us, are you a group? Oh, right, get out of here. No, we ain't no group. I don't know. What is that? We're not no group. And people were like, you are a group. We're not a group. And people started inviting us to sing at programs and stuff. So we became a group, and we were just started singing all around. And then my youngest sister started writing songs, and we were writing together and all of that kind of stuff, and we were going around all over the place, all of Connecticut, all different states and stuff, singing and stuff. And then people just started asking us, well, where's your CD project? And we was like, okay. First, we wasn't no group. And we laugh about this today. Like, first, we wasn't no group. Now people want us to do a CD. What are these people? These people are nuts. And so we got together and we just focused and concentrated and we did a CD project and that was history and that's just how we became who we are and been hanging in there ever since.
Yeah. So Catrice Cornette in the highest praise, huh? That's pretty cool. That's really cool. That takes a lot of dedication, too, to keep something up like that. I mean,
oh, my goodness, yes. Oh, my goodness. You do not know how many times I wanted to quit. I tell people, we're not a group. I quit. We're not doing this anymore. Then somebody will call and say, do you still have your group? And I was like, what? Are you kidding me? It's got to be. You got to be joking. And can you guys come out and sing for us? And so then I have to go out and sing. But we try to rehearse on a regular basis. And
right.
We get together and keep the band. The hardest part is keeping musicians, you know, and on the, you know, because they are hard. The good musicians are hard to come by, and so they're
right.
in high demand. So
right.
they play for everybody, you know. So if you're not consistently gigging, then you know it's hard for them to hang in there with you because they have to make money, you know, and stuff. So that was the hardest part. The singers, my singers have been pretty consistent. I have a core group of six of us, two of each voice part, and for the most part, they've been pretty consistent, but it is hard, and it's discouraging sometimes, but you just remember why you're doing it, and when you love
right.
what you're doing, you know, it makes it worthwhile just to keep plugging at it and just stay focused, you know, you try to anyway.
Yeah.
Right, absolutely, yeah. I know you are a musician and a singer and all that, but at the same time, you're a music director too. So,
right,
yeah. What's that like? What's
I don't really I don't know because I do it automatic. Like I've done it for so long, it's just like it's just who I am. It's not something that I do. So it's pretty, you know, just what I do. It's like you get the music together, you plan. I do different workshops and things like that. But for the most part, you teach the music, you teach the parts. I studied music at Delaware State when I went to school.
Right.
Different colleges like Westminster Choir College. I've been there before and just taking courses and under different people, you know, under different professors, just to try to perfect my craft. And you just try to stay, like, on course and kind of, like, keeps you sharp when you have to consistently teach somebody else the same thing that you're doing. And
right.
so when you're directing the music and the hardest part is getting everybody together. Like it seems like sometimes it's a slow process in the beginning and it seems like what you're working towards is not going to get there depending on how difficult the pieces of music are or what the purpose is. But at the end, when the performance happens or whatever the project is, like I just did a play and my group was the music for the play. And so we kind of like as the play was progressing, you can't really always see it. You know what I mean? Until you're actually like the day of the performance. But, and it really turned out really nice. The play was called Coming Home. It was really, really good. And then we did a play last year in January called What If It Happens Today? And that I was the director of the whole thing. And
oh,
so,
my God.
Wow. Yeah.
Oh, I got to ask
cool.
you because I love
what?
Plays. Live performances and plays. Huge
yeah.
fan. What? Oh,
yeah.
my gosh. And to direct
yeah.
a play, what was that experience like? I mean, come on. Yeah. So what if it
at
happened
first
today?
It was, at first, it was, what if it happened today is a play my middle sister, she wrote the play. I have a sister who writes, a sister who dances, and then I sing. And so
oh, wow.
I know, right? It was pretty cool.
Yeah, well, I was telling your family.
Yeah, yeah, it is. It really is. I have some cousins who are comedians and actors and all of that kind of stuff. But anyway, the play is about what if Mary got pregnant with Jesus now and not like back in Jesus' time, and how the world would see it, how people in her church would talk about her, how her friends would act, you know, all that kind of stuff. It was funny. It was, we cried, we laughed, we got angry. It was such an awesome play. And directing it was fun because you kind of got to get people to, like, when they think about Jesus and God, they think about, you know, back BC days. Well, it was
right.
The most difficult part was trying to get them to be themselves. I want you to be who you are now. Like, I want it to happen in 2013. So that was cool. We had, you know, people in there who we tried to cast. What I do try to do is cast people the way their personalities already are, which makes it easier for them to do the character, you know. So it was really cool. We had people in there who were gossiping about Mary. We had people who were on Mary's side. We had Mary and Joseph. They weren't married yet, so even he started doubting her, you know, and all of that kind of stuff. And because everybody's talking about it, you know, he's thinking she messing around on him. It was really a good play. The storyline was really good. So then you got to bring all of that together with the music, you know, and we had a live band, of course. And it was really a nice experience. It wasn't my first drama that I've directed, but it was the first one I did in a long time that wasn't a full musical. I usually do musicals where we sing and the people act out what we do. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like that. Yeah.
Right.
But this one, we had a lot of speaking parts and stuff.
Well, as far as being, you know, a director for like a live stage performance like that, I mean, how involved are you with just like, you know, the correspondence of like, you know, and the choreographing and everything of.
We did it all. I had a dance instructor because at the time.
Oh, my God. Okay.
Yeah, we had a dance instructor, but at the time we kind of like did everything. Like, you got to block the people, stage blocking and the staging and the props and the stage crew and the lighting and the sound. It was just so phenomenal. And we did it in a dinner, in a restaurant, dinner theater type thing in Mount Holly. We did it as a dinner theater, and it was a sold-out crowd. We actually had standing room only. It was awesome, especially when you see it on stage, because you practice every week. We actually started out practicing with different scenes. So, like, Mary and Joseph in, like, scene one, everybody in that scene would come together, and for weeks we did it like that. And then We brought everybody in with the stage crew, and from, I guess, maybe about week 8 all the way up into the end, the whole cast was there. And because I can play a little bit, you know, I didn't bring the band in until maybe almost near the end because they get bored sitting there. But they would come to some of the rehearsals, and we used a lot of sounds and music that we, you know, you create sounds for, like, different things.
Right.
It was really cool. It was really fun. And the response from the – actually, people have been asking us when we're going to do it again. I'm trying to do it again in 2014, looking for a place now to do it at. But it was really a good play.
Did you make a recording of it?
Yes, we do. We do have a DVD of it. We sold DVDs after we got done with it, with the play. Yeah, we do have a DVD. Actually, it's on YouTube, some of the clips, if you look it up, What If It Happened Today. It's on my YouTube channel. And you can see, like, different snips and stuff of different parts of the play. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. It was fun.
Yeah, that is cool.
I like
cool.
doing that kind of stuff. It breaks up the monotony. You know, like, it gives you something different to do besides singing, just straight singing.
Oh, right,
and
right.
It's awesome when you see the acting and the dancing, like you just said, the choreography come together. Like, at the end of the play, the whole cast did a dance together. And, like, the senior people and the little people, and it was the younger people, because we had all ages in the play. I think the youngest was maybe four or five, and the oldest person was 61.
Yeah.
And we did a dance, and we did a dance all together on the stage. It was really cool.
That is cool.
Yeah.
And that, you know, that's something I've always admired. I am, believe it or not, an aspiring playwright.
Okay. So
that's why,
why
you know.
Why are you laughing after you say that?
No, seriously.
To
talk to someone who has actually done it and directed, you know.
Yeah.
Like, wow. That, to me, that's like awe-inspiring. That is beautiful.
Yeah, I love it. I do. I really do. I really actually, it's a lot of work, though. A lot of work.
Yeah.
But it's worth it at the end. And the best thing is when you, because you're trying to create, you want people, you want to bring people into your reality. Like the play, it's reality to you. Like it's your thought, your process. And so you want to bring people, when they see it on the stage, they should believe that they're there. Like, just like when you go to a movie theater, you know, like you're sitting in the movie. If the movie is really, really good, when it's over, people are still talking about it. You know, when you're walking out for the movies, you know, and so that's what you want. You want people to feel like they're sitting in your apartment while you're sitting on the stage, you know, talking, and you want to bring them into the experience. The only way you can do that is if the acting is phenomenal, if everything, coordinates itself together.
Right.
And that's the big piece as a director, trying to, timing is everything in the stage play.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I mean,
even more so than in the cinema, because, you know, the cinema, they have the luxury of editing.
Right.
You know, post-production.
Right.
But, you know, a live performance, you know, it's boom, there it is. Got to get it right live.
Right.
You know,
and
it's a totally different experience.
Exactly. If you miss your punchline, you can't go back and get it. You know, everything, timing is, you miss it all. You miss the punchline, you know, and timing is key. And a lot of people don't get it, you know, especially when they're doing, you know, plays for the first time or whatever. But that timing has to be perfect so that people don't miss the important stuff. You know, like this stuff in the play to draw the storyline, but the important stuff has to be where it's supposed to be, how it's supposed to be. And the people have to understand, your actors and the people who are in the play, that it's okay to be who you are while you're bringing, you know, they have to make these characters come to life. This is who you are. And so one of the things that I like to do when we're doing productions is after, like, maybe the fourth or fifth week, they're not even allowed to call themselves their real names when they're around me. Like, when we're around each other, whoever your character is, that's who you are, and that's how you have to address each other, you know, like when we're in practice and, you know, things like that, so that they really get it, you know, they really begin to take on the identity of the characters. I think that really helps a lot.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Yeah.
So, okay, so I got to ask, okay, you're...
Okay,
well, no. Okay. It's one thing being a director and being in charge, but then when you are working on a music video, such as your new one that just came out, Abba Father.
Right.
Yeah. What was that experience like? You know, being directed and everything. What was that experience like?
It was really different for me.
Yeah.
Only because, like you were just saying, like, they, like, movies are different. They need, like, 50,000 takes. Like, okay, can we do that again? You just have no idea how many times I walked out the door, walked back in the walk out the door, walked back in. I need another angle. Can you walk out the door, walk back in the door? Like, just that kind of stuff like that. Like, that's just so dumb. But I get it, you know, but at the same time, like, you do it a million and one times, I'm like, really? I got to do it again? But I, you know, it was fun.
That's funny. No, I get it. I know.
True.
I've worked on films before. Believe me.
Yeah,
I know,
like,
what you're talking about.
Oh, my God.
Okay.
Can you do that again? Again? Yeah, I want to get it for another angle. Okay. And so then, you know. And then when you see it, it's like, oh, okay, now you understand, because when you actually see the movie, you know, all together, then you say, oh, okay, I get why you have to do it over and over again. But when they're telling you, okay, do this again, or, you know, 50,000 times, really? Like,
right, right.
Yeah.
You know, we
so,
sang
so
that
how long
song.
Did that shoot? I mean, how long did that video
yeah.
take, the total shoot?
Days.
I mean, what,
it was,
what
only,
was
it
like
was
for you? I mean,
it was only 2 days. The first
two
day we started. Yeah.
That surprised me.
Right.
That's
for
wow.
For one song. For
uh-huh.
one song.
Right.
The first day we didn't even start till in the evening.
Uh-huh.
So because we wanted that, like when remember when I don't know, it was a scene when I was walking away from the car and the sun was like coming down. So the second night was Fab day was longer. We started in the early afternoon because we wanted some outside. We did all the outside scenes with the park scene and all of that stuff was
uh-huh.
the second day, and then that night we did some shooting at my performing arts center, and we set it up like a cafe, and
uh-huh.
we shot some scenes there. So that was the longest day, but we sang that song. I had to sing that song like in 2 days, maybe about 6 times. Like you're singing the song over and over and over again. You can't make mistakes, you know, because they're filming. And you know, when they get a close up of you, it was, you know, if your lips aren't matching, then it's harder for them to sync up the film and all that kind of stuff. I learned a lot of cool things
right.
about, you know, filming and acting and stuff. But the director, his name is Vinny Allen. He was phenomenal, very nice young man. I've known him most of his life. He grew up with he's the same age as my children, my adults. I have adults, my kids aren't young anymore, they're older, and he's the same age as them, and he's a very good videographer and director as well. And so we kind of like, what I did like though was he was very open to creating on the spot. Like, you know, some people, you write out the script, the storyline, which what we did that ahead of time, and you tell them what you want, but then, you know, they don't want to deviate from that. And he was very open to, you know, creating and changing during the shoot, which was cool. So that was nice. We changed some things. We saw some things that would maybe do better, or, you know, we took some stuff out. So that was really fun. But that thing about doing it over and over, no, I can't do that again, that was funny. Yeah. Yeah. But I liked
yeah,
it.
I mean,
liked it a lot. I want to do another one.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed them. This time I think I want to do one where, have you ever seen those videos where people are just like singing? You know, like it's not so much as, like mine was more like a short movie, a short film or something,
mm-hmm.
but where they focus on the artist just singing and stuff like that. I think I want to do one like that next time. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that's cool. Hey, you know, Mr. Gosinski.
Yes.
Yes, I know you had a song of hers that you really like, and maybe we should play it real quick.
Tell me
it,
first.
It was a hymn medley I found on YouTube that you did.
On YouTube?
Yeah, I found a
you
video.
Yeah.
How about, let me tell you
hymn medley.
The
hymn medley.
Oh, okay, yeah.
The
Trees
Cornet
yeah.
and Highest Praise.
Okay,
yeah,
cool?
I used to live in the Detroit metro area, and there
okay.
were a bunch of guys, I did construction, there were a bunch of guys that always played gospel on the job site, and we, you know, listen to it and kind of get you going throughout the day, and it reminded me of what they used to play. It kind of brought me back.
Cool. Okay.
So
yeah. So are you okay if we play that song real quick
yeah,
and then come back
play
and
it. Yeah,
yeah
you can
all right,
play it.
Yeah. It's a good I've heard it. It's a good piece.
Okay.
All right. Here we go. This is Catrice Cornet and Highest Praise. Hymn medley. Here we go.
Jesus is all the world to me. My love, my joy, my
That was Patrice Cornett and Highest Praise. Highest Praise. She has some good stuff going on.
How about
all
that?
Right,
was my
Patrice?
Dad. That was my dad playing on that song that him made me.
That's a good one. I got to ask you, so what's it like for you to, collaborate like that with other musicians and all that to produce a song such as, in a hymn medley?
I think that's the best way to do it. I like collaborating with other musicians because
mm-hmm.
they might hear something or see something that you missed, but I also like different styles. I like learning, different techniques and that type of thing.
Right.
I usually don't even do complete it unless I get a different group of musicians to at least listen
uh-huh.
to it and get their opinion because, you don't always, everything is one dimensional and I like my music to be able to reach everybody. So a lot of different ideas come out when you have people around you who you can collaborate with. I'm
right.
really looking forward to collaborating with some different musicians with this project that I got going on now. So, the project that I have going on is called Here I Am, Lord. And
mm-hmm.
I started it about 5 years ago, but things just kind of like I went through a divorce and
mm-hmm.
Just different things in life, and I just
right.
made up my mind that I wasn't going to rush the project, that I wanted it to
right.
be right, and I wanted it to come forth when God is ready for it to. So we had maybe about 5 songs, then I lost my band. And like I said before, we're talking about how hard it was to keep musicians. So for like maybe about 2-3 years, we were just like when we would perform to instrumental tracks. We didn't even have a live band for like the last maybe 2-3 years. And then finally, we got a live band now and things are, starting to pick up and move. Of course, because now we got the single done, which will be on the new project, and
mm-hmm.
I had released the song in 2010 because that's when we were trying to really move the project forward, called I Am Your Child, and that was supposed to be like the kickoff for the project, but it didn't work out that way. So that single
mm-hmm.
sat out there for a long time till now, till 2013, and then we just seems like, this is the time, so we're really excited about that. And actually, most of the people who I've been working with either have their own gospel group or, done it somewhere else or are solo artists. And so I'm really excited about, that because I think it makes your project diversified when you have
right.
different ideas. It's not like just one dimensional, So I think that's really cool.
That is very cool. And
yeah,
it is, absolutely. And it's really cool what you have going on. And you have such a beautiful voice.
Thank you so much.
You
thank
really
you.
Do. You really do.
Thank you. Thank you.
No, and
thank you
for
so
being
much.
For being on the show and everything, and for sharing your, your intimate thoughts and your upcoming projects and, Abba Father and everything. I mean, great stuff. Really great.
Thank you.
If somebody wants to keep up with you, do you have a website or somewhere they can go to?
Yes, I have a website called KatriceCornettMinistries.org, and it's all spelled out, KatriceCornettMinistries.org, and they can find out anything they want to do, find out about me. We're actually, the first time singing the Abba Father Live will be November the 2nd. We're doing a Silver and Black Affair with a bunch of my artist friends and their groups and stuff here in New Jersey and in Williamstown, New Jersey on November the 2nd. And this will be the first time that I premiered a single live, actually.
Wow.
We're excited about that. And stuff like that. But yeah, they can find me at CatriceCornetMinistries.org. I'm on Twitter. I'm
mm-hmm.
on Facebook. I'm on LinkedIn. I'm on Google Plus. I'm all
yeah.
over the internet. I'm a
yeah,
I'm a computer person. I'm a computer person, so I love it. You know, social media is I really enjoy, you know, being on social media. So yeah, look me up. I really would love to hear from everybody.
Yeah, well, you know,
yeah.
And you know, have you found that social media really? I mean, this is something I like to ask a lot of the guests I have on the show is social media. I mean, and how beneficial it has been for.
It has been tremendous. Like you guys were saying, how you found stuff on YouTube and this and that or whatever. Let me tell you something. The first time I Googled myself and my name popped up, I was like, "What is going on?" I was so like, "Oh my God, you can Google me!" I love it. It's
beautiful,
phenomenal. Yes,
that is beautiful.
Great.
So I'm not the only person who Googles himself, right?
yeah, you can Google me. It's really cool. Yeah, I got a YouTube channel and. People like they you go out, you sing. People videotape you with their phones, and they just throw stuff up on YouTube if they like it. And people are like, I've seen you on YouTube. On YouTube? No, what do you mean? I didn't put this on YouTube. You don't have to. Your fans do it for you. I love it.
I love it too. It's beautiful.
Yeah, I love it.
Oh,
yeah.
All right. Well, hey, Catrice, you have been wonderful, and
I really
really appreciate you coming on the show and, you know, talking about your music and your art and everything. Very nice. And you know what? I'm definitely going to stay in touch and I'm going to keep following
you
and everything. And I'm sure a lot of us are. I mean, wow. Yeah. Thanks so much. All right.
Thank you. God bless everybody.
Thank you. And you know what?
Good night.
It's late. I know. Sorry for keeping up so late, but thank you so much for being on. You've been wonderful. Wonderful.
Thank you. You have a good night.
You too.
Hey, you too. Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye. Bye.
All righty.
Well, we've got to.
Yes, there's a lot more going on than we got going on, that's for sure.
That's for damn sure. Wow.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. We have about 8 minutes left in here, and then we got the after party coming up. So let's all stay on here and have a fun after party. And you know what? I forgot the Pledge of Allegiance. So you know what? Remove your hat, and Dr. Quinn, remove your wig, really quick. Your hairpiece.
All right.
There she goes. There she goes. She's removing it. Then we're going to do the Pledge of Allegiance. And then, you know what? We're just going to stay on and have fun. We got a lot. I mean, I'm sure the three of us have a lot of fun shit to talk about for the next hour or so while we continue to get inebriated. But, man, we've had some great guests on tonight. Very, very fun. Very diverse. Very great. Wow. All right. So here we go.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Cheerio.
Cheerio? What?
Cheerio.
No. No, that was an American Pledge of Allegiance.
I've started using that, Brian, in my correspondences with regardless of authority sometimes, because everybody says cheers or regards, so sometimes I say cheerio. I figure they can handle a rejection better if I say cheerio.
Really?
Yeah. Gotta give people what they want.
That's what they want, huh? They want some sort of, like, generic fucking just
yeah, hello, I'm an English asshole bastard kind of response, regardless of the story.
What's more generic than, like, cheers, you know, because everybody says cheers, so that's what I just pitch it up.
Everybody says cheers. I don't say cheers. Fuck cheers. I did like the TV series back in the day, but come on.
maybe just when I get rejections, people say cheers. I don't know.
Oh, man. So, all right. So, yeah. Wow. What a fun pair of guests we had here tonight. And you know what? It's time for us to just kind of cut loose and move forward with, you know, with our feelings and our thoughts. And, you know, I'm still up there with, you know, I would still like to hear Quinn, really, Dr. Quinn, Dr. Reverend Quinn, talk about, you know.
Yes.
Oh, Dr. Quinn, you know, we always love to hear what you have to talk about. I'm sure you have other really good stuff, but, Sinead O'Connor versus, you know, oh boy, Miley Cyrus. I really want to get into that.
Okay.
Which one do you want to get into, Miley?
Well, it used to be Sinead back when I was a boy, back when I was 18. But, yeah, it's changed to Miley for me. But, no.
I think the first part about this is that I don't know if it's just, you know, that we're getting older.
Yeah.
But doesn't it seem like the, you know, however people are pushing the envelope, it just gets dumber?
Uh-huh.
And, you know, on one hand, and I was doing some more reading and stuff, and something I had forgotten about Sinead was that Sinead, when the Mike Tyson thing was going, you know, when he had raped that woman, Sinead had gone out and was blaming the woman and calling her a bitch and everything, and, well, I'd forgotten about that, and, well, you know.
Well, that was before you were on our comment. My comment was kind of that, you know, I think Sinead's a hypocrite, you know. Here she's someone who's always been star for attention and done things to get attention, calling Miley out for trying to get attention.
Right, yeah, and now she's middle-aged and
yes.
Suddenly feels
nobody
like, okay, I'm going to do this open letter. Open letter.
You know, she's clearly got, you know, some mental illness to deal with. That said, I'm not saying it's an excuse. I'm saying it's a reason that maybe she's a little off the rocker. But, no, I think that the whole Miley thing, you know, okay, whatever, it's just dumb. Really.
Well, I don't see it any different than anything Madonna did. Or,
exactly.
You know,
Madonna or any other, you know, provocative musicians before her. I mean, what's the big deal? I think social media actually has made this, like, a bigger deal than it really
well,
is. Had social media been, like, prevalent? What's that?
I think the big deal is because she was Hannah Montana.
I don't even think that. I don't even think of her. I never even saw an episode of that ever.
You know, I heard about Elton John was on. Two people have told me this now that Elton John was on Ellen. I guess I don't watch Ellen. You know, but and he was asked about it. You know, what do you think about Miley? And he said, you know, that whoever's telling her to do this is brilliant. She's not doing it on her own. Someone is directing her to do this to sell albums. You know, artists don't just do these things. It's very calculated. It's, you know, and whoever's telling her to do this is brilliant because she's going to sell tons of records. Her album will be number one just because of all this hype. So that was Sir Elton's take on it.
Well, hey, we're getting ready to go into the archive. So you know what? I'm going to flush us real quick. I'm just going to do a quick toilet
toilet flush, and then let's, yeah, keep this going on in the archives. Here we go, here we go. Flushed ourselves straight down the fucking, yeah, straight down into the sewer. But here we are, yeah. So go ahead and continue. Miley Cyrus, yeah, sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off, buddy.
No, I was just saying, you know, that Sir Elton's take on it was, you know, that whoever the publicist, whoever's telling her to do this is brilliant. And artists don't just do these things. It's very calculated, you know, and it's going to sell tons of records. It's a brilliant publicity stunt, though. And that was Sir Elton's take on it. That's all I was saying.
Well, you know, and see, that's the thing, you know, fucking, goddamn, Sinead O'Connor's, like, sudden, like, open letter just seemed like a bullshit move to me. It's like, wow. I remember, you know, her doing Shaved Head, back in 1989, 1990, Shaved Head, nothing compares to you, you know, bullshit.
It's actually a Prince song.
I mean, not just that, I mean, just the fact she had a shaved head and she was female.
Yeah, and didn't she do some, in the video for it, didn't she, like, fake cry, like, you know, do some...
Yeah, yeah, she had a little
like
tear
that.
And shit coming down her face. Yeah, see, exactly. Exactly, you know, and she sold millions of records and made tons of money, and, you know, I don't know, it just seems very weird and hypocritical to me, but, you know, I'd like to hear a female perspective. Dr. Quinn, I'm sure you have something to say about this.
What specifically? What, or what's the question?
Yeah, what are you digging
What's
for,
the
Brian?
Question?
What are you trying to incriminate her with? What are you digging for?
Who, me?
Yeah, you.
I'm not trying to incriminate anybody. Yeah. I just think, you know, it was kind of a funny move for Sinead O'Connor to do this open letter. Almost seemed like a publicity stunt on her own.
No problem.
You know, go straight to Miley Cyrus. You know,
but you know that these stars, everybody writes letters to each other and, you know, telling each other to stop it. Who, you know, people, or they tweet. They tweet each other about, you know,
right.
Oh, Amanda Bynes, stop acting like an idiot. You know, this person, stop acting like an idiot. You know, everybody's telling each other to, you know. So I don't necessarily see that what Sinead did was any different than anybody else telling somebody to, you know, knock it off.
Right.
I mean,
but it became this open letter that, you know, became some sort of media phenomenon. I mean, okay, justify it, please. I want to hear a female perspective, because, seriously,
what,
I really do. I just...
Or trying to justify what she...
Justify or whatever. I don't know. I just want to hear a female perspective on the whole subject. To be honest, I really do.
Crap. Maybe I'm the wrong female.
The wrong female.
Why Sinead, you know, thought that she needed to, you know, and I will be honest, I haven't had a chance to see this actual open letter, what she said to Miley, but I'm, you know, it's safe to say that she was chastising Miley for, you know, sticking
right.
her ass in Robin's crotch. I don't know that it's any of her business. I don't know. I think it was, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I think she made it her business because Miley Cyrus said she was inspired by. she was inspired by.
Inspired by?
Sinead O'Connor. Nothing, you know, nothing compares
well,
to you.
There was something about Miley had released some emails or something that Sinead had sent her like 2 years ago, and Sinead was going crazy about that. Saying they're no longer relevant. I sent this to her years ago, and it's a big debacle.
Wait. So Miley is saying what was saying that Sinead provided nothing compares to you provided inspiration for her to stick her ass in Robin Thicke's crotch.
I don't think that was really, you know, I don't think so. I mean, you know, Miley Cyrus, you know, she's younger, and she probably was influenced by, you know, Sinead O'Connor when she was younger, you know, and admired her. So, you know, what's the big deal about her quoting
Miley
saying,
Cyrus, was Miley Cyrus even born? She was not even born. She's what, 20?
Oh boy.
21.
She wasn't even born. Here we go. Oh my god.
She was a fetus. So she's 21 now. So that means she was born in 92.
Yeah, I believe so, Brad. I believe she's 21.
Okay.
I looked her up to see how much of a creepo you were.
Okay.
So that was 92. That's around when Sinead was big. How could she have been influenced? She was a fetus. She wasn't influenced when she was young.
An achy, breaky fetus at that.
Exactly. So I don't know. Sinead O'Connor couldn't possibly be one of her influences. I find that kind of hard to believe. Maybe she likes her music now, but her genre, they're two entirely different things. So for her to say that, you know, oh, well, I don't hear any Sinead O'Connor in anything that Miley does.
Thank God for that.
Well, indeed. I think it was disingenuous, and, you know, maybe Sinead was kind of pissed that, you know, Miley's trying to, you know, steal her shade or whatever. But.
Well, whatever the case was, it got us all talking about them, you know.
Indeed. Absolutely. So.
Still live over there, Brian?
Yeah, I am.
And Pulse. I'm taking another shot at applying for health care right now.
Health care, you know. No, I don't believe in health care or Obamacare or any other kind of care.
The never ending applying for insurance. Nope, can't get on still. Oh well.
All right, guys. Well, let's wrap this up. We're just gonna wrap this up and say goodnight.
What?
At this point. All right. Well, you know, good night, everybody, and. It's been a fun show, and we did, you know.
Yep.
Thanks so much for being on, guys. And, I hope somehow that Miley and Sinead O'Connor work it out.
Hey,
good night, everybody.
Guys, yeah.
Maybe they'll make a sex tape.